This podcast is brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short. You can find more podcasts and other resources on our website, www.acamh.org, and follow us on social media by searching ACAMH.
So my name is Claire Evans. I'm a second year trainee clinical psychologist at the University of Southampton.
Nice to meet you.
And I was kind of asked here today to do a podcast with the Association of Child and Adolescent Mental Health. And I'm obviously here to interview you. One of the reasons I picked you is because prior to training of my interest in and my work in youth offending institutes.
Oh, interesting.
So actually coming across lots of sort of individuals with history of maltreatment and also in ADHD as well.
Uh-huh.
And I'm currently on my CAMS placement, so it's super relevant what you're doing. I'm also about to embark on my thesis as well.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm here to interview yourself, Professor Helen Minnis. Might you be able to tell us a bit about your background before we start?
Yeah, so I took a bit of a circuitous route before getting into academic child and adolescent psychiatry and ended up just through a travel bug working in an orphanage in Guatemala and noticing that the children in the orphanage, many of the children were very different, really very, very different in their social behaviour compared to the children in the surrounding villages. And I was lucky because I'd spoken to somebody at the Institute of Psychiatry before I went, because I was interested. I thought, maybe I could do a bit of research in the orphanage. And they'd said, think about, this was Eric Taylor, and he'd said, think about attachment disorders. So I'm glad he did, because he was right on the money in the sense that in the orphanage, many, many children were indiscriminate in their behaviours, and literally if you walked into the orphanage as a stranger, little children would just literally climb all over you and you couldn't walk forward until you peeled them off. But then if you went into the families in the surrounding villages who were actually materially worse off, children of that age would hide behind their mother's skirts. And then you think, oh, that's what John Bowlby said they were supposed to do. Whereas the workers in the orphanage tended to think it was just kind of cute, confident behaviour. And then I came back to the UK to train in psychiatry. And at that time, this was in the mid-90s, and quite a lot of adoptive parents particularly were talking about this behaviour. And I have to say, they weren't being listened to. You know, on the whole, child and adolescent mental health clinicians were saying, yeah, you know, what are you talking about? This is not really anything. But actually what they were noticing was, on the one hand, these indiscriminate behaviours, and on the other hand, something which was quite rare even in the orphanage, which was children who didn't seek comfort, didn't accept comfort, and were often quite guarded and sort of wary and watchful in their behaviour, and their children have the other attachment disorder, which is reactive attachment disorder.
That's really interesting. So it sounds like those early experiences really ignited.
Very much so.
Your passion that's been stoked by your life's work.
Absolutely. Amazing. And interestingly, I never would have thought I would be an academic. But I just had this real nosiness. I thought, oh gosh, there are questions to be answered here.
Yeah.
And there are still so many questions to be answered in this area.
And you've also conducted some research with Lisa Dinkler. So some of that research looked at kind of the prevalence rates of neurodevelopmental disorders in those who with a maltreatment history. And I wonder if you might be able to sort of tell us what those sort of findings might mean for people working both in child and adolescent mental health services and also the infant mental health services that you're trying to set up.
Yes, I think what it really tells us is that we should be giving every child who has a problem a really good comprehensive assessment. I think one of the things we do in CAMS very often is we assume that a child's behaviour is due to their abuse and neglect. And it might be. But we often stop there. We say, well, this is clearly trauma related. You know, look at the family that child's come from. Of course he's going to have a temper. And maybe that might be true, but there are lots of different causes of behaviour problems. And a colleague of mine, a clinician colleague, who works, you know, in mainstream CAMS, really pointed this out to me, a colleague called Christabel Boyle, and she said, you know, I worry about the children under five who get referrals of, in inverted commas, behaviour. And they're often the children we don't take on because there are no clear symptoms of psychiatric disorders. But when you think about it, a child under 12, and this would also be true of a child under 5, behaviour problems are likely to be, could be a symptom of almost any psychiatric disorder. So, you know, a child with autism is more likely to have behaviour problems, a child with ADHD, a child with, who develops a tic disorder, as well as children who are depressed and anxious. And then the other worry is that if we don't see these children, we don't give them a good assessment, we might miss the less visible problems, which are, you know, the children who don't seek comfort or don't accept comfort.
And I suppose my interest is how, by uncovering this research finding that actually maltreated children might be have greater prevalence of neurodevelopmental disorders, how do we ensure then that other issues aren't overshadowed?
Yes, exactly. And it's just, we've just got to be both and. I mean, excuse me, I think the work that Pascoe Fearon has done and is doing, the other speaker this morning, you know, it really reminds us that attachment is crucial. It's crucial for every child, and the great majority of children will exhibit attachment behaviour. And the way they do that, you know, whether it's secure or resistant or ambivalent, is less important for psychopathology. But the few children in the population who really have problems with developing attachment at all, or who develop it in a very atypical way, you know, we do need to be really worrying about those children too. So, you know, if you've got a child who's got a diagnosis of ADHD, but you're maybe worried about, you know, a high-risk situation in the family, then, you know, we need to be thinking about, is that child also indiscriminately friendly? Or, you know, thinking about, in a clinic setting, is that child snuggling into the parent in a scary, strange clinic setting? Or are they up-chatting to you as a clinician? And is that actually a sign that this child's got some indiscriminate behaviours? And then should you be thinking about, is abuse and neglect in the mix?
Okay, so how, as clinicians, might we sort of gather this information? You're suggesting observations, what?
Well, I think we have the skills. I think we do have the skills. It's not rocket science. I mean, we've developed standardised measures for disinhibited social engagement disorder and reactive attachment disorder, but honestly, you know, you just pick up your psychiatric classification system like you would do for anything else, and it's just thinking about it. You know, it's just thinking, you know, does this child seek and accept comfort appropriately? Is this child shy, which children should be when they come into a clinic, or not? And then you would do your usual psychiatric assessment or psychological assessment, make a formulation. I do think standardised assessments are helpful, particularly with these children, particularly if there's behaviour problems in the mix, because what I find is that often families will want to talk about temper tantrums, you know, and you could spend your 50 minutes just hearing about different forms of temper tantrum. Whereas if you've done a standardised assessment first, so say the family had completed a development and wellbeing assessment before they came to the clinic, or even if they'd just done a strengths and difficulties questionnaire and a questionnaire for attachment disorders, then you'd be thinking, oh, I better ask about that. And it just reminds you to say, yes, that sounds really difficult. The behaviour's really difficult. But you mentioned that your son also touches the doorknob a lot. Tell me a bit more about that.
Okay, that's really interesting. I know a lot of your work and actually your current study is sort of with foster carers or those who have maybe not had the best start in life. Can you tell us a little bit more about the BEST study that you're
doing? The BEST services trial. So basically what we've done is we've recruited 220 families in Glasgow and London where the child, the preschool child, so from 0 to 5, has come into an episode of foster care. And we've consented the birth families, and I have to say, on the whole, they've been really keen to take part because they're all interested in contributing to science. And then we follow the child up a year and 2.5 years after they come into care. And they're randomly allocated to receiving either an infant mental health service mm-hmm. called the Glasgow Infant and Family Team or the London Infant and Family Team, Gift or Lift, or social work services as usual. Mm-hmm. And really the question is a social work model of assessment and decision making as good as or better than an infant mental health model for assessment and decision making? And what the infant mental health model does that the social work model doesn't do is a trial of treatment with the birth family. And it's really not clear which is going to be better. Mm. And I think for two reasons. So one is that the social workers are trained to make these difficult decisions. That's what they do. Mm. We're not a psychologist and psychiatrists. Mm. You know, we're trained to make mental health assessments and do treatments. Mm. So the infant mental health intervention takes longer. You know, it takes longer to give a child treatment. And the question is that actually going to be a more cost-effective model compared to social work? Mm. Which is going to make both timely and correct decisions?
And what do those randomly allocated to the intervention receive? What does it look like?
The infant mental health assessment. So the first 3 months is they get standardised assessments that are very attachment based. So they use an instrument called the Kroll procedure. Mm-hmm. And this was all developed, the whole model was developed in New Orleans by mm-hmm. Charlesina and Julie LaRue. Mm-hmm. And they basically assess each individual relationship that the child has. So if the child has two birth parents and two foster carers, they'll come into the clinic 4 times. And they'll do assessments where they slightly stress the relationship. They'll give the child toys that are a little bit too challenging. And what you want to see is whether the child's able to recruit the parent or the foster carer to help. There's also a lot of interviewing and questionnaires done with the birth family. So in that 3 months, they'll find out all about the birth family's history of trauma. Mm-hmm. They'll find out whether they have problems with domestic violence, substance misuse, and they'll refer them on if they do. Mm-hmm. If they feel that the fostering relationship isn't good enough, they'll recommend a change of placement because it's crucial that the child is in a good enough placement. Mm-hmm. That hardly ever happens. Okay. Usually foster care is good enough, yeah. And sometimes they can do a bit of work to help. And then what they do is after the 3 months, they tailor a treatment specifically for that family, that birth family. So, you know, they could get video interaction guidance, they could get mellow parenting, they could get child-parent psychotherapy, but it will be tailored to their particular needs in parallel with interventions for mental health problems, substance misuse, etc. But it's within a time scale, so they've got 6 to 9 months mm-hmm. maximum, really, to get the treatment. And during that time, the team will be formulating a recommendation for the legal system about whether the child is adopted or goes home.
Wow, it sounds a really innovative project. This could have amazing implications.
Well, we'll see. It's so messy and complex. We'll see.
I'm quite interested in, so you picked 0 to 5. One, why have you picked that age group? And what might it look like if it was then rolled out to an older age group as well?
So that's a good question. The first question really comes from science, really. So, I mean, a good example is the Heckman curve. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you can literally put in Heckman economics early childhood into Google and you'll see this beautiful diagram which has come from a lot of expert knowledge and literature reviews. He's a Harvard economist, basically showing that the earlier you get in there, the better the bang you get for your buck.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
So really, from all we know from science and clinical work, you know, the sooner you get in there, the easier the work. Mm-hmm. And it's so true. I mean, you know, a couple of sessions with a very stressed family can sometimes get them right back on track. Mm-hmm. With these families who are very, very high risk, you're going to need more. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to need as much if their child is only 6 months old as you would need if you waited until the child was 14, because then you've got all of the other layers. So that's why 0 to 5, and if you ask Charlesina, you'll say, well, I'm a little guy. I'm a little guy. Isn't that lovely? Because he just thinks those are the kids to focus most on. Mm-hmm. What would it look like at older ages? And now, if I could wave a magic wand and you would do something similar, I would be looking at both the children's and the parents'. Yeah. Maltreatment related and neurodevelopmental problems.
Okay.
But who knows? And some looked after accommodated mental health teams do that very well,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I think one of the things we could be doing better than we've been doing with our adult psychiatry colleagues is thinking about, does this parent actually have an autism spectrum condition,
mm-hmm.
you know? Do they have ADHD that could be treatable?
So a bit more joined up working with adult mental health services as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then just finally, just a question, a personal question really. I guess in light of your kind of research into maltreatment and your work with young people and infants and children, what advice do you have for clinicians, especially new clinicians like myself, working, say, in CAMHS when we don't have the infant mental health provision as yet,
mm-hmm.
so coming across those that might be maltreated?
So are you talking about infants that have been maltreated? Or are you talking about children?
Ones that come through into CAMHS that might not have been picked up before, so they have that history.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it really is back to assessment.
Okay.
You know, it's about, for me, those really complex kids, it's so worthwhile using a good standardised assessment.
Mm-hmm.
In our clinic, because we often are asked to see the children with diagnostic dilemmas, you know, is this ADHD?
Yeah.
Is there autism in the mix? But there's also been a history of abuse and neglect,
mm-hmm.
and blah, blah, blah. And so what we do is we do a developmental wellbeing assessment before
mm-hmm.
they come into the clinic. And some families will are happy to do that online. If they can't, we phone them and we do it by phone.
Okay.
And it's really, really time well spent, because it means that when they come into the clinic, what you can then do is, what we would generally do is we'd have somebody doing a cognitive assessment of the child, because that's nearly always informative,
mm-hmm.
because you get the profile and you can feed that, but
yeah.
it's not about the IQ.
Mm-hmm.
It's about whether they've got problems with working memory,
mm-hmm.
do they have, you know, do they have the kind of three-dimensional skills, all of that language. It's the details of it that's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, somebody would be reviewing what they'd found in the development well and say, you know, you mentioned that there are nightmares. And if you've done the standardised assessment first, even though it's only going to highlight things, you can then explore the things that the parent's concerned about. It means you get off the obvious things, you get off the loud problems and onto the quiet problems.
Mm-hmm.
And just make sure that you've covered all of the neurodevelopmental problems,
mm-hmm.
all of the maltreatment related problems,
mm-hmm.
and things like anxiety, depression, eating problems, sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And actually you can do all that usually in 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm. So comprehensive assessment.
Comprehensive assessment.
Okay. Any other tips for new clinicians kind of working in the field?
I think the other thing is what I think we do well in CAMHS is liaising with other agencies, and I just
mm-hmm.
think for these children it's even more important. So, you know, who else is seeing this child?
Mm-hmm.
Who else can you phone?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to ask the nursery nurse or
mm-hmm.
The class teacher, you know, and you want to say things like, you know, if you had an inspector in the class, is this child likely to be shy, or would they go up and chat? And just, you know, just asking those kind of questions,
mm-hmm.
so that you're really getting a sense of the child. And I think we're generally quite good at doing that. But it's just making sure that you're open to both routes in. It's the trauma-related problems and it's the neurodevelopmental
problems. Thank you. I think that about sums it up. I just wanted to say a huge thank you as well.
It's a pleasure.
It's been really interesting for me to find out a bit more, but really informative as well.
Thank you.
You can hear more about your work as well on the ACAMHS website. So talking about the aforementioned research with Lisa.
Yes.
And like you said, on YouTube, you've got a video as well.
Yeah.
So fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This podcast was brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAMH for short.